Okay, namaste. Welcome. Today we're beginning month 3 of the Yoga of Entrepreneurship Thought Song, and we'll be talking about transforming the ego. This is big. Originally, I had framed it as releasing the ego, and I've changed the terminology on that because I don't know that we ever do release the ego. It's part of us, and we'll talk a little bit more today about how it can be a really useful part of us, and the idea of releasing it or suppressing it or making it not exist can really maybe cause more problems than that is worth, and is, as a human, really not a possibility. We just continue to grow to be able to witness awareness of it so that we are gaining wisdom and living moment by moment more and more from our higher self, as yoga calls it, as opposed to our lower self, which is where the ego is and our minds, our chattery minds, are in charge. So, as I said, this is big. I mean, in some sense, we're spending the entire year together on this because we can't make our businesses an expression of our true selves without burning away the woulds, the shoulds, and the coulds, okay, that stand in the way of that. So all of that, the woulds, the shoulds, the coulds, all of that is the ego. Let's talk a little bit about what I mean when I say ego. What does it mean in the yogic or in most Eastern traditions to call something coming from the ego? How does that? What is that and how does that function? The ego is everything that separates us from our own wholeness, everything that separates us from that knowledge, makes us forget that we're actually intrinsically whole and part of something or everything that's larger than us. So my guru, Mazaya, has written a book, and I'm going to read you some passages from that because I think it's really useful in learning, kind of articulating what the ego is and how there are certain patterns in which most of us all get stuck. I've put the book in the Thought Song member area as recommended reading. The name of it is The 11 Karmic Spaces, and she talks about the ego, and she explains very simply what karma is, which most people are confused about, and how they are intertwined. And then she gives some really practical examples and really practical tools and methods for kind of gaining that awareness that allows you to sort of jump tracks from that pattern you've always done or always gone down unconsciously to jump a track for a moment into awareness and change an action, change your mind, change the action. So I'm going to read some of this book, and I'm excerpting from, with permission, okay, from her ashram to do this. So let me read to you what she has to say in explanation of the ego. The ego's first thought is not I need, but I want. And this is the beginning of duality. Our natural state of bliss is now divided by the idea that something is missing. If I have this or that, then I'll have my bliss back. So there's that idea. I'm going to stop reading for a minute. There's that idea of separation. Because I want this, and if I don't have it, then there's something innately missing or absent in me. Okay? I won't be okay. And then she goes on to say, this mistaken idea takes hold. The thought I want now takes countless forms, countless ways to keep the soul separate from its birthright, which is this. That's what ego is, our small self, born of forgetting, held together by hunger and separated from bliss. This is the ego as it is understood in most Eastern philosophies, although Western psychology uses the word differently. It's in its failure to remember anything greater than itself, the ego acts out of its own willfulness. It is through the ego's willful action that karma is birthed. Ego is the aspect of the individual self that keeps us limited, confused, and out of touch with the universal self. So, this is the nature of being human, to have this experience of having what yoga and Eastern philosophy calls the ego that wants to be in charge. That's our experience of the world, is this duality. And when we're on a spiritual path, then we really spend our lives kind of transforming as part of ourselves to gain deeper understanding of our own connectedness, of our own wholeness. We witness our patterns. We witness how this causes us this separation. And all the stories we tell about it causes us pain. We witness how it keeps us separate from the wholeness that we're so deeply craving. And it's not that the witnessing, but it's a witnessing the ego and using it, using where it's pointing. Because it's pointing us to what we're here to learn. It's not useless. It's not like a futile point, oh my God, I'm a human, I'm in this body, and I have this chattery mind that's telling me the same story over and over again, and there's no point. Okay, instead of getting hopeless about it, what if we look at where it's pointing to, okay, so that the journey of our lives is really for this. It's for transforming the ego to experience deeper joy and true wholeness. There's a passage, okay, in one of the yogic ancient texts called the Upanishads that says, directly across from your pain is your bliss. Okay, and you can add any of the ego's attributes in substitution for pain, across from your fear, across from your mourning, across from your hurt, is your bliss. Okay, so another way of saying this colloquially is the only way out is through. And the key is not to push the ego away, not to judge its messages or its patterns, but transform it. Use it to light the way of your path. So again, my guru would say, use it as fuel for your own consciousness and really for your own joy, for the life that you crave to live. And in this context, in the context of being a business owner, being an entrepreneur, use it all, anything that comes up, business, that's an expression of your true self. Can be used to, let's use it that way. So how? How do we use it in that capacity? First, you bring the ego close. Bring what the ego part of you is saying to you really close. Don't push it away. Okay? I'll also need to say anything you can understand, you can consume. And Buddhist monk Pema Chodron put that this way, which is kind of funny. If you're confronted with a piece of shit, okay, or you feel like a piece of shit, take a good look at that shit. Pull it close. What does it smell like? What's its shape? What is the nature of shit? Okay, I always laughed when I read that period. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, really? So it doesn't really mean to indulge yourself in it in a way that you stay stuck there, but to get to a point where you're not afraid of it, so you've got the thing that's going on with you, okay, the fear about whatever it is, insecurity or ridicule or money not being enough, you've got the fear of that, but then you're afraid of looking at it on top of it. There's just kind of like a double ego thing layer going on. So let's just take that fear of looking at it, practice taking the fear of looking at it away, and attempt to, like you've been cultivating with your witness mind, attempt to look at it and acknowledge it with compassion. Let yourself feel it. Let yourself feel what you're feeling without trying to tell yourself you're not supposed to be feeling it. Don't push it away. There's a simple little tool for this, actually, to get you sort of out of that mind space. Sometimes even journaling can get you too much in the mind space where you're going over and over and over again with the situation that's happening. When I used to work at one of the courts of appeals, I through this whole period of time where I was incredibly bored. Okay, I was just bored. Like, I was like, this is so boring. I don't want to be here. I have to look after case after case. I write the same kind of memos over and over and over again. And I was completely bored. And I remember writing my teacher about boredom, which seemed like a funny thing to write a spiritual teacher about, but it was so painful for me to be at work that I wrote about this. And what she wrote back to me was, the next time you're bored, inhale boredom, the feeling of boredom, into your heart, and exhale boredom. And continue to do that until it shifts. And then if it shifts into something else, another feeling, another experience, breathe that in that experience in and out of your heart chakra in the center of your chest until that shifts. And what happened was I realized that there was something under my boredom, that my boredom had become a defense mechanism, a default to what I was experiencing. So I was experiencing boredom, and what was underneath that was actually a level of performance anxiety. Okay, so then I had to look at that, and then underneath that, I got to see a level of insecurity, a level of dissatisfaction with my professional life, and I got to ask myself the real questions about how I was going to shift that. But if I had stayed in boredom, I never would have gained. Or if I had refused to look at boredom or be present with boredom, I never would have experienced or gotten to what I really needed to process and move out of. So that's a great simple exercise, is if you're feeling something that's like odd or uncomfortable, see if you can be present with it, even for 2 or 3 breaths, by breathing it into your heart and breathing it out again, and see what shifts. So, again, one of the overarching first techniques is to bring what your experience is close rather than trying to push it away. Okay? And then the second piece is to find the gap. Okay? There's a gap in our thinking. And again, this is an interesting concept, but let me explain a little bit more about the gap. And I'm going to do that by, again, reading from the book, The 11 Karmic Stages. Because really what I'm describing as the gap is really being present in the moment, in a space between where the thoughts come one after one after one, in the space between where we act in habitually or even unconsciously repeating the same pattern. If you can find the small space before that, you're able to make change. So this is what Ma had to say. There is a gap in the universal order. There is a gap in karma, and that gap allows you to change your destiny. Okay, that's pretty big. That's a pretty big, bold statement, that the gap, just that moment, that little space allows you to change your destiny, really? It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around. And she goes on to say, it's the now. So again, it comes back to being present. Reality has a dimension of depth in both space and time is not as we perceive it. Okay? Awareness is not past. It is not future. It is not some after-death state. Awareness is now, and it is the key to freedom. The gap, the moment, is outside of time. Our innate wisdom presents itself in the moment of hesitation. And she goes on to say, I don't mean indecision or procrastination. I mean the tiny hesitation before action that offers the choice of not blindly following your destiny. This is the moment where intuition says yes or no before every action, large or small. This power of hesitation represents a higher mind in battle with the lower mind. The higher mind longs for freedom. The lower mind, controlled by ego, clings to its habits. If you hesitate and use that moment to refuse the ego its will, you can change your destiny. When you place yourself with awareness between that which is and that which was, even in seemingly small choices, you force the universal Godhead to open a path so alien to your old destiny that you then take control. So in that gap, the power of the moment, the power of hesitation to transform an old pattern. So we've been working on all of the practices of yoga go toward that. They go toward creating the ability of facilitating your ability to utilize that hesitation and access in that moment of hesitation your higher wisdom. So again, I've talked before about kind of like you can train your body for a marathon, meditation, mantra, even the physical asana practice. It's like training your mind to stop for a moment and get out of the way so that you can listen more deeply. But as we know, the mind, the nature of the mind is to chatter on, and the nature of the ego is to keep us in the status quo, right? It knows what it knows, and it's always in charge, and it always knows best. It's kind of, and our mind is, it's tool for that. The ego is masterful, okay, and it's a shape shifter. it says a lot of the same messages, but if you move on from that one, it'll create something else, maybe more subtle, a different shade of the same story. And the messages of the ego are intertwined. They're all related, right? They tend to reinforce each other even. From being a business owner, we may feel arrogant or entitled about our talent or our education or our experience, and at the same time feel unworthy at what we've accomplished with them, which makes us jealous of someone we perceive to have had more success than us, and then resentful that we're working so hard without seeing the results we think we deserve, when she or he, who's not even as XYZ, you know, the ego catalyst, as us, is making it. And then before you know it, we're feeling like it's useless to even try, and then we're depressed because we're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? How am I spending my life? And we fail to see meaning in it. And you know how it goes. One ego-driven thought, often hidden as a feeling or experienced as a feeling, leads to another. But the good news is that the opposite is also true. Unraveling one of the ego's patterns or traps also starts to unravel all the others. So just finding a little gap in one thought or one action can transform the patterns of the ego as a whole. So now we're going to take a look at three common ways at the ego challenges and sabotages entrepreneurs specifically, okay, and how they're thread together to reinforce each other. First, we'll take a look at the two sides of pride, okay, arrogance and unworthiness. Then we'll explore jealousy, and last, we'll look at money, or really any manifestation of, you know, wanting a result or accomplishment in the world, worldly desire. But most of the time, the biggest trigger for business owners is money itself. So, and each of these relates to one of the lower chakras. The lower chakras, the first, second, and third chakra, are really about our existence in the world. How safe we feel is the first chakra. How connected we feel is the second chakra, or self-expressed also at times. And how powerful we feel is the third chakra. So that's kind of shorthand for how the lower chakras, how we experience those issues in relationship to being in the world. You'll notice, though, in the three things that I'm pulling out to talk about with you about being a business owner, that I didn't say fear. I didn't identify fear as like one of its own ego stories. And that's because fear often underlies much, if not all, for many of it, all of it for many of us, okay, at least from time to time, that our actions, our feelings, our minds, chatter, and narrative is driven by fear. And that can happen in any one of these threes or in any other kind of variation of how our ego shows up in relationship to our business. So let's take a look at this kind of duality of unworthiness and arrogance. Unworthiness and arrogance are two sides of the same coin, same issue. And both, again, are rooted in fear. And I understand that to be an imbalance in our relationship with personal power, which is a third chakra issue, I said, right? Third chakra, known as the solar system of the body, is all about whether or not we feel like we have an integrated, healthy sense of our own power in the world, our own power to speak, our own power to act, our own power to exist in a meaningful way. And often, we bounce back and forth, many of us, between unworthiness on one hand and arrogance on the other. It's almost like we're making up for one by then sliding into the other experience. Or we have the experience of kind of both simultaneously, which, when I say that out loud, sounds like it could be a little ironic. But like in the example of being arrogant about our abilities and unworthy about what we've accomplished with them at the same time. You know, they can coexist. And both of these are kind of the same side of the coin, which we could call pride in a way, in that it's pride about or a misrepresentation of our own power. And it can be one of the last of the ego's messages to burn away, okay, holds us in the traps of the other. Because it doesn't allow us, when we're in unworthiness or when we're in arrogance, there's not a lot of room to move because that feeling is pervasive and keeps us from taking another action, so or a corrective action. Okay, so it kind of prevents us by not allowing us any space to really look, not to bring the other ego things that have come up close, like we talked about a few minutes ago, and see, okay, what's really going on here? What do we really need, or admit what we really need in order to make a change or to learn? So we stay stuck. And you can see how this would play out pretty easily, both from the arrogant side and from the unworthiness side, okay? It's arrogant. Well, I might be too proud to ask for help. I might be too proud to admit that I made a mistake or be seen kind of in that way. That, oh my gosh, I've been wrong here, or I'm not capable. And I feel it, but you can see then now we're quickly moving over into unworthiness, okay? You can get stuck just as powerfully there, saying, well, I feel too unworthy to be seen in this vulnerable place of having been wrong or having failed or having gone down this road and not gotten the result, and now I don't know how to ask for help. So we can't look at the issue because underneath we're worried that it somehow makes us unworthy of love. So we either feel that unworthiness, we can either feel that unworthiness, or we might mask it by feeling projection of arrogance. So it kind of sounds like an irrational fear to say it out loud like that. I'm worried that I'm unworthy of love, or not okay. Okay, but it's true, isn't it? I mean, underlying it, we can feel unworthy just to be accepted as we are. I think that's a really deep human fear and a really deep human longing, is to be seen and to be accepted exactly for who we are. Warts, ego, and all. And we can all get in the space of not wanting to be seen there. It's uncomfortable. And I think this is where, I don't think, this is where imposter syndrome lives. Okay, if they really knew me, they'd see I'm not qualified, okay, to do what it is that I'm doing, to offer what it is I'm offering in the world. And they'd also see that I'm just holding it together by a thread, okay? There's no magic here. It all might fall apart right now. So what? Okay, it is a great mantra for this space. And it kind of makes you laugh, another good practice for this space, okay, of being an imposter syndrome or flipping back and forth between arrogance and unworthiness. So what? Okay, we're all just holding it together by a thread. So let the thread go. We're all human. We're arrogant. We're angry. We're unworthy. We're hurt. We're fearful. We're also tender and generous and loving and magnanimous and helpful and beautiful, you know, beyond belief. Have you ever had the experience of seeing someone's vulnerability and loving them more for having, right? I think about that moment. Okay, many people feel that way about you. So see how you can allow that. See if you can bring that kind of compassion in for viewing yourself. Okay, and another great tool for this, so what is a great tool for that. Another great tool for this is, you know, pranam at your work. Pranam, what is that? That is when we bring our hands together into prayer pose together, and we just take a little bow, just a little acknowledgement, a little reverence in our day. That's a pranam. Pranam at your work. Pranam at your interactions. In your mind's eye, pranam. Honor it. Honor your work and honor them. Honor your interactions. Okay, you, part of the arrogance unworthiness is taking on all of the responsibility for your body of work yourself and making it an identifying tool. And that's not a criticism. We absolutely all do that. because it comes through us. It gives meaning. I've heard of what gives our life meaning, and it still can and should. But what if you stepped back and you said, hey, what if I'm not? What if this isn't all on me? What if it isn't even all me? What if I'm not the doer? What if I'm a vessel for this work? Okay? What if your work runs through you? Okay, so pranam to it. Say, you know, thank you. Thank you for running through me. Thank you for letting me do you. It can get you quickly out of that space of unworthiness into more of a sense of wonder and awe and gratitude. Again, that's a little piece. Pranam is a little tool to create a gap, okay, for transformation, a gap to change your mind and to change your action. And again, I can't take credit for that. That's a practice also taught me by my guru, and you can read in more detail, like I said, if you feel that thinking of the book. I highly recommend it. It's been very interesting. I've read it 3 times and have taught it multiple aspects of it different times. And I keep seeing, reading, learning new things from it. But just something about the idea of like moving into that space of saying, you know what, this work isn't all me. Like I can't take full credit and I can't take full responsibility for it. I used to think that was kind of incredibly arrogant, to think that, you know, my work ran through me from God. Okay, I wouldn't even go there. And it used to make me crazy, like livid, okay, and offended. When I hear coaches say things like that, like they downloaded something or they channeled it or, you know, oh, you know what, this just ran through me, like, this is running through me right now. It felt at the time kind of manipulative, okay? Like they were giving their work more authority than it deserved, right? And I mean, surely I was the one who should be the judge of that, right? I mean, hear the judgment on my part. That's in this at that moment in time, and. You know, as if they were saying that their work had more authority than it deserved and that somehow, you know, they were this chosen vessel of the divine and, oh, it really made me nuts, okay? But here's the thing. We all have spiritual energy, okay? We all have Shakti. We're all part of the whole universal consciousness. And so, we all have God running through us, okay? We all have God running through us as our unique gifts and talents and desires. It is the universe running through you. It is. That's it. So let yourself get out of the way. Let your ego self get out of the way and see what that does. Simply pranam to your work. Say thank you. It changes everything. And I do believe that it is a tool, it is a cure for imposter syndrome. Because why not you? Why else are you here? And ultimately, you know, the way out or the way to minimize the time spent in that arrogance, unworthiness conundrum is continuing to cultivate a deeper and deeper knowledge of exactly who you are as this human being with a spiritual path who is an expression of the divine and wants to create a meaningful life for the times that you're here. That question again, when are the moments, in what moments do you know exactly who you are? Cultivating the tools and the actions that you need to gain deeper knowledge, the feeling of that. And you've already started doing that. You're already all doing this in a consistent and extraordinary way. So those are some tools to work with that swing between arrogance and unworthiness and the imposter syndrome or the resentment kind of or judgment of yourself and others that kind of comes into that space. As I said, and this is, you can see how this then easily turns into or relates to jealousy, right? Personally, in my experience, I think jealousy is the most corrosive emotion of entrepreneurs, especially in this, like, in social media age where we can see immediately at least what people want to tell us about what they're doing, okay, and their marketing messages about the kind of results that they can get their clients or how fast their business is moving or what exposure, media exposure they've gotten. You know, we're bombarded by all of these signals of success or maybe what we feel like we should be doing or an opportunity that should have come to us or how quickly we should have built to such and such a point. And it comes at us fast, and it feeds on unworthiness and arrogance. It feeds on judgment of ourselves and judgment of others. And it takes us out, this is the thing about jealousy, it takes us out immediately of our own moments. When we're starting to think now about what we should have done that might have gotten us a different result or what more specifically, we're thinking about somebody else. We're not even thinking about our business anymore. We think we're thinking about our business. We think we're thinking about our life. But we're not connected to it in that really grounded way anymore. In our mind, we're off over here looking and examining this other person's projection of their life, what we little we know about their business and their life. Okay? And jealousy also feeds on fear of not earning enough, of not being enough. Again, we're going to talk about money after jealousy and those elements of it. But as I said, it keeps us out of our own moment and of our own connectedness with our own wisdom about who we are and what we're doing and why we're here, what our own wisdom about the next step we need to take and our own wisdom about what creates meaningful life and a meaningful body of work for us personally, okay? Keeps us there, off somewhere else, distracted by the little piece we see and know about somebody else's life, okay? Somebody else's business. Again, rather in this moment right here of our own. And again, I think that Ma's words are helpful, and I couldn't say it in a more succinct or profound way. So I will read you the last passage that I'll share with you today. And instead of looking at yourself, this is about jealousy. Instead of looking at yourself, you cling to jealousy, never pursuing what you want or need. Looking at all the people who, so you think, have more than you do. That is the biggest illusion, the belief that your jealousy is about another person. In reality, you're jealousy of yourself. Take that in a minute. If you're jealous of somebody else, in reality, you're jealous of yourself. Okay? She goes on to say, always intertwined with jealousy is the thought that your life isn't full. Jealousy is a kind of blindness, especially blindness to your own beauty. Okay? We're jealous of ourselves in the sense that we think we could have done something else. Or perhaps we feel we haven't taken the steps. Or we think that our best life is behind us. Or we're imagining a future that may or may not come. So again, jealousy of ourselves as opposed to somebody else arises from the fact that now we're not We're not present with ourselves and conscious and committed to really what it is that we want most deeply want. Somehow we've gotten distracted, not just by this moment of jealousy, but there's a long way leading up to that. One last passage here. When we are jealous, we are out of the moment. Talked about that. We are in someone else's business, someone else's moment, and not our own. And that's an easy place to hide. There's a heaviness that comes from always looking to the future, always dwelling on what you don't have, always wondering when you will have that which another has. You can change these thoughts in the positive knowing, telling yourself it's on its way. Okay, it's a great mantra too. It's on its way. You will eventually get what you want, although maybe not when you want it. Yes, the abundance of the universe, you can actually achieve anything. Therefore, sure you know what you truly want. Jealousy, if we think about moving out of or minimizing the amount of time we spend in jealousy, the key is the awareness of who you really are. Coming to that place where you know innately the difference between that feeling and reaching outward and the feeling of, oh, okay, this is me. I'm grounded. I know who I am in this space and what I'm doing. So it's on its way. Great mantra. Another great technique is, remember I had said generally bring the ego close rather than push it away. Bring what you're jealous of really close to you. Be specific about it in your mind's eye. You know, get inside of it. Imagine what it looks like, what it feels like, what the rest of your life looks like if you had what you're jealous of. Who are you? You know, if it's appropriate, what does it sound like, this thing you're jealous of? What does it smell like to have it? Okay, have what makes you jealous. Just get inside it and bring it really close. And then ask yourself if you like it. Imagining that you actually have, you know, what is making you jealous if you have it? Do you like having it? How much do you like? How much do you really like it? Or is it, that's okay. And then ask yourself, does it fit? Is this right? Okay? Often the answer is no. But if the answer is yes, then you know, you can go clearly toward what you really want, and you can start to uncover, okay, this is what I really want. I found it very useful to ask the follow-up question. So to ask, does it fit? And then to ask the follow-up question, what is it I really want? Okay? And again, true confessions here. First, since we're talking about the ego, just let go of my ego, that somehow by revealing these things about me, I'll have less authority or be not taken seriously or not know what I'm talking about. First piece with me is that even the idea now of tackling this month, which could be an entire year of work, my ego was like, oh, yeah, you're not up for that. That's too big for you. Like, just, oh, man, I don't know. Kind of like my own, the ego was saying to me, you're going to take me on really seriously? Who do you think you are? I felt a little intimidated by the task. Seems to be working out all right. But the other thing is that, you know, jealousy, it pops its head up. You do the work again and again and again. And I've had times where it's come up in the process of being in my business than others. And, you know, what you got to do in some way to minimize it for yourself too. I've had times where I've actually had to take a momentary moratorium, okay, on Facebook because of the messaging and the impetus of being bombarded with people's outsides and comparing them, right, to my insides. But when I've asked, you know, when I've taken a step back and I've asked, what do I really want? I don't want this other person's business. I don't want what I know even about another person's life, okay? I either don't want to run a business like they have it structured, or maybe I don't want to have gone through what they, I know or maybe imagine that they've gone through to get to that point. I really, truly only want the best of what I have to offer. And I only want my own needs taken care of. And I only want my talents honored and supported. And I don't mean that exclusive of all of you and everybody in general. I just mean, I don't want somebody else's business. I really do want the integrated expression of what is meaningful and right for me when I ask myself what I really want. And that often looks really so different than even the outside of someone else's business. So it was very enlightening to come home to this space of only really wanting my own life and to feel into deeper knowledge of what that felt like. What did it feel like to be in integrity with that? You know, what did it feel like in my body? It's a great question. And so then what does that feel like to let that unfold? Is there a place of stillness or of, you know, kind of embodied knowing that I can check in with as this unfolds so that I know who I am? And I'm kind of always checking in with that place. And that's what I mean by really knowing who you are. And once you have even a glimpse of this, okay, and know how it feels, know where that stillness is, know how you have an embodied sense of that grounded place for yourself, jealousy doesn't have any power anymore. However real it felt, even when it pops its head up again, you know, it was an illusion and a distraction. And you can move past it much more quickly. And I love this quote, which is the perfect bridge into talking about what comes up around money. Okay. The moment of truth comes when what you want is what you need. There's that alignment, okay, of deeply wanting and having that be what you most deeply need. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about needs versus wants. Let's talk about any other, even it really is kind of applies to any other worldly desire, we'll call it a worldly desire for your business. Fame, status, money, maintaining a lifestyle, being known as an expert, however that manifests for yourself. In my own experience, as a business owner and working with business owners, money itself can be a white knuckle issue, okay? It can be really very loaded because money is a very real way, in a very real way, is how we support the basics of our life, okay? We're a currency culture, our currency world at this point. And here we are, business owners, out here on our own, generating it from nothing, okay, without any guarantee. Our basic needs of shelter and food rest squarely on us. And it's kind of asking or harvesting money from the universe. It can feel that way. And in a way, that never really dawned on us. That never was the way it really was when we had a job. Okay, and for those with jobs, I don't know, although they certainly, I acknowledge, they experience all the same kind of human anxieties around food and shelter and wellness and status and money. I don't know if it has the same dynamic when you're not the one who's going out and figuring out the mechanism by which you're going to, quote, harvest this money. And it's trickery. It just is. I don't know that we can say it's not. And I actually don't know, you know, I don't know an entrepreneur, one for whom money was never any kind of trigger, okay? And two, who doesn't work consciously on how money flows through their business, okay? I know people who have taken a while to do that, who ignored it for, you know, up to 10 years before deciding how they were consciously going to look on this. It got to that point where they were like, I have no idea what's going on. But everyone gets to that point where it's necessary to confront the flow of money and your relationship with that flow of money directly. So we said, you know, at the baseline, money's tough and triggery because it triggers our security, our basic needs for food, clothing, shelter. All of that is first chakra issue, right? Anything that has to do with our secure existence in the material world has to do with the first chakra. And that's a real need. That's not imaginary, right? No one here is going to tell you that taking care of your material well-being in terms of food, clothing, and shelter is not a real need for humans. We live in a human body. But I think the question comes down to, can we cultivate inner security alongside and in the face of this? Okay? Can we do that? Can we cultivate inner security, and can we look at money and ways of having it flow through our business directly? Can we, during this process, cultivate a faith that our needs will be met and that we will be in a position that we will be open and that we will see opportunity for how? Okay, so it's the combination of those two things. It's the allowance, okay, the cultivating of inner security so that money trigger isn't way up all the time, and taking an action, okay? Beyond our needs, of course, we all know this, money also triggers our egos, our sense of worth, our sense of enoughness. If you haven't already, I recommend that you go back and listen to the preview interview that I did with Nona Jordan, because she talks about money as being a construct that we throw all of this meaning on, and we expect it to do certain functions that it's not able to do for us. And one of those things is give us a sense of our own enoughness. We're going to explore this a little bit differently in month 5, also when we talk about dharma, because we'll see then that there are actually 5 dharma types. So dharma is your innate nature, or what you're here to do, what you're built to do. That's the path that you are meant, quote, to follow. We're going to talk about that concept. And we'll see that there's kind of 5 different dharma types, one of which is merchant. Okay, the merchants are really good at money. They're really good at exchanging resources, of allocating them, of figuring out how to find resources and attracting them to them. That's what they do. That's like their dharma. That's their nature. And we, cultures and countries, have dharmic types of won't be any surprise to you. We live in a merchant culture. We also will talk about cycles of human existence, and we live in a merchant cycle, okay? So we're constantly bombarded by these values, these merchant values, these values around money and acquiring it and consuming it and spending it. So we need to learn the skills around money flowing through our business, and we need to attune ourselves to really what our relationship to it is. And in order to do that, that's why I have invited two guest speakers to be with us in the program who specifically work with people in their relationship with money. Because as business owners, we cannot avoid our relationship with money and how that impacts us. One is Nona, and she'll be joining us this month, in December. But for month three on December 12th. And she is going to take all of any questions you specifically have in terms of coming to terms with your relationship with money, in terms of matching up, you know, earning to spending, kind of, you know, how to approach it. And her preview interview gives a great overview of kind of her evolution and how she's come to understand money and its role. And then the second person will be Barry Tesler Linden. She also did a preview interview, worth going back and listening to that if you're feeling like this is a hot topic for you right now. And she actually gives a little overview about kind of like where we're at culturally or as human civilization historically with money, where we are at, you know, on a macro level. So that might be an interesting context in which to look at your own relationship with money. And as we go forward in the future months, we'll be marrying up the inner work that we've been doing with the outer piece of your business and making choices about how to match the business model you have and the practices that support it to all this knowledge that you gain from the inner work. And the money, obviously, since your business is designed to earn money in a way that is sustainable and is a way that supports you, we'll be looking at that intersection more and more closely over multiple months in the future. I also want to take a moment, and this call is going to be a little longer than normal. We're at an hour now. We can talk a little bit more on an overview of the money issue. And then we're going to move into our meditation and mantra practice, which is directly related to our creating a gap in our own experience and story of money. I want to take a moment and just say that, you know, like with pride, where there's two sides, there's also a flip side to money. We see that, you know, okay, how do I get my business to